Welcome to the first official Runner Stories podcast. Today I'm interviewing Jaden Abbott, who has an incredible story of resilience. Running was the only thing she was focused on in high school and was well on her way to using running in order to pay for college. Her senior year, she was faced with a devastating accident that left her unable to run. After being told she would never run again, she has found a way to get through it all and come out stronger. She is incredible in every way, an amazing mom, wife, and I'm also lucky enough to call her my sister.
Hello, hello. Thank you for coming on my podcast and being my first official guest interview.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Obviously, we're sisters, and I think at first glance, people might think that I'm having you on because you're my sister, and I think even some of the people that are closest with you don't know that you have this incredible story of resilience and overcoming hard things. And so that's part of the reason why I started this podcast, is just to give people like you a chance to share their story and hopefully inspire other people as well. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I know most of this stuff, but why don't you go into a little bit of your background and tell me a little bit about yourself?
So I grew up in Southern California. That's where I lived most of my childhood. And then after high school, I moved to Utah and went to UVU for culinary school. And that's where I met my husband. And we've been married for 6 years now. And we have two little kids.
Cute. How old are the kids?
Bradley is 4.5. And then Oakley is 18 months.
Let's get into your running background and how you started running.
Okay, so when I was in middle school, my mom was the assistant coach for the high school cross country and track team. So sometimes after school, I would go to practice with her and just run with the high school team. And I felt pretty cool. I was prepared to join the cross country and track team my freshman year. And I remember the night before, I got super nervous to the point where I was like, that's it. No, I don't want to do this anymore. And yeah. Mom was like, well, we already spent $100 on your shoes, so you at least have to try it. So yeah. I did, and very quickly got over those nerves. Yeah, started running track and cross country.
Awesome. The running shoes is definitely the most expensive part, but I'm glad that mom pushed you to keep going.
Me too.
So you were a freshman. I was also on the team as a junior.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So we got to be on the same team together, and that was fun for 2 years. So going into high school, what were some of your goals and kind of your reasoning behind joining the team?
So at first, my goal was to just go and have fun and improve. I wasn't sure how good I would be. I felt like I had a lot of pressure because all of my older siblings were really fast and like varsity, setting school records, everything. So I was really nervous that I was going to just be this JV, not good. But I very quickly found out that I also had a knack for running and worked at it. So I set goals to just continue to improve, get PRs. And then eventually I had the goal to make it to state and then get a scholarship and run in college.
Yeah, awesome. You made varsity your freshman year, right?
Yeah, so my junior year is when our girls' varsity team made it to state, and that is the same year that I got my own 3-mile PR, which is the cross-country distance for high school. Mm-hmm. I got my own PR, and that was at Mount Sac, which is the hardest, but also, like, the funnest course.
Yeah, so for anybody that doesn't know, Mount Sac is a really popular race course in Southern California, where we grew up, so the course was 30 minutes from our house, and we ran it a good 6 times a year, probably. And anyway, I was at college, and when she broke my Mount Sac PR, I was like, oh, she's going places. She's going her senior year, she's going after all my records. So that was really fun to see and really cool. And then your junior year, you guys went to state.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about that.
So I feel like it's a little bit different in other states as what it is in California. So in California, there are several qualifying meets in order to make it to state. So you have to qualify at your league level, which is like 8 schools that you have to get in the top 3 in order to make it to CIF.
Yeah.
And then once you get to CIF prelims, you have to run.
I think it's like the top 4 teams, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so you're the top four teams you have to place in, and that is like out of hundreds of teams that made it to CIF prelims, you have to make it in the top four teams in order to go to CIF finals. And that's where a few different divisions all around California compete in order to see who goes to state.
Yeah. So, and especially we were in the southern section, which is arguably the hardest section. So, California, huge state, a lot of hurdles to even get to state. You guys did it. The year after I left,
I
which was so sad. It's really hard to qualify as an individual as well. When I was in high school, the team was very new and just not as seasoned. But then by the time I graduated, you guys got really good and were able to go to state, and it was super exciting. So I was really proud of you.
Thank you.
So you're super nervous to go into high school and feel like there's certain expectations or pressures on you, but you're surpassing those expectations and pressures and you're feeling really good. So let's talk about your senior year and what happened the day before Thanksgiving.
Okay, so my senior year, going into it, I was super excited. I already had teams looking at me or colleges looking at me for scholarship. I was super excited to just continue to improve and solidify that my senior year. Our team ended up not making it to state my senior year, even though I think our consecutive times and placements was just as good as the year before, but just the competition was that much more steep. So we didn't make it my senior year. And so then the week after CIF finals, when we didn't qualify for state, was Thanksgiving. And so everyone was in town, all the siblings were in town from college, and we decided to get our little dirt bike out and just kind of like go ride around the neighborhood. And we were just taking turns hanging out, having a good time. And my turn came along, and I just took a turn wrong and ended up falling and breaking my leg.
Yeah, and it was bad. Can I share a little bit from my perspective?
Yeah.
So from our perspective, we hear this screaming. We were like, "What the heck?" And it took us a minute because it didn't even sound like you. And finally, we peeked around the corner to see, and we saw it was you. And we ran to you and trying to address the situation and figure out how bad it is. And we had no idea. What were you thinking in those moments? Do you remember?
So I just remember kind of waking up. I don't know if I had passed out. One of the neighbors, I had crashed right in front of their house. And we didn't even know them. They came out and they're like, "Don't move, stay right there. Like, someone's calling 911." And I'm like, "Please don't. It's okay. You know, I just fell. I'm just gonna get up and go on my way." And then you guys came running down the street and I was like, "I want to get up and move." And the neighbor's like, "No, don't move her." And we're
Yeah.
all pretty
Or
young.
you were in the
I'm in the
middle.
middle of the road.
Yeah. So we didn't want you to get hit by another car and like the dirt. It just seemed like it was such a scene. And I think we were like, no, let's make it not a scene. Let's not get in trouble and let's not make it a big deal. Let's move you to the side. So we moved you.
And I remember as you guys were helping me to go over to the curb, I can't remember if I told you or Kyle. I was like, "My leg hurts." But we had no idea. I thought it was, you know, a twisted ankle. I don't know.
Yeah. And so this is like hard for me to admit because I know that it probably contributed to the severity of your injury. But we took off your boot because we couldn't see what was going on. So we were like, let's see the broken ankle or whatever it is. When we took off your boot, we were like, this is bad,
Yeah.
really bad.
Yeah. I remember seeing blood on my sock, and I was like, "I'm not gonna look anymore," because I didn't want to freak myself out and make it even worse somehow. I don't know.
Yeah, that was probably smart. So we knew that it was bad. So somebody had to go tell mom. That was my job.
And mom had just barely gotten home in the last 30 minutes with dad, who had just had shoulder surgery. So
Yeah.
she's trying to get him situated and taken care of. He's still kind of coming out of anesthesia.
I remember knocking on the door, mom, and she's like, 1 second. And I'm like, no, it's an emergency. And so I walk in and she's like, what happened? I feel like mom is typical 90s mom. Like you break your arm, but it's not really broken unless you spend 5 days complaining about it and then you get taken to the doctor. I feel like that's pretty typical of that generation. And I had to express in this moment where she's already stressed, this is really bad. So I get her out the door, and by the time we turn the corner and see there was an ambulance, a fire truck, and I was like, they were not there when I left. I think, did the neighbor call?
Yeah, the neighbor had someone inside their house call 911.
Okay.
And I was like, no, it's not that serious. In my mind, we call 911 if someone is dying. I'm not dying, you know?
Yeah. So mom gets over there, and I think we were all just kind of underestimating the severity of the situation, and we didn't know. And so...
And I was super calm, which I think...
Yes.
Like, I was in shock. Mm-hmm. Where if I was screaming and freaking out, then it might have been a different vibe. But yes. I was just like chill, like not trying to draw attention.
Yes, not screaming, not doing anything, just these firefighters said to put this boot on, so I did. And mom is like, no, there's no way it's that bad because of your reaction and because of just like how it escalated so quickly. And so we ended up refusing the ambulance. And mom took you to the hospital.
Yeah. So the firefighters put on an air splint. So it was this big blow up thing that they wrapped around my leg and tied it up. And they like put me in the back of the car and off we went.
Yes. So I went with you guys to the hospital. But what were the firefighters telling you and the paramedics telling you?
So they said, once you get to the hospital, go have someone go inside, tell them what's going on, and have them come out and bring you straight in. Don't go into the waiting room. And so I remember when we got there, you went in and tried telling them, you're like, we need a gurney. We didn't come in an ambulance, but
this is an emergency.
We need some help out here. Yeah. I think you came back out and you were like, they said we could use a wheelchair. Super inconvenienced.
Yeah. And so we ended up putting you in a wheelchair, rolling you in, and they set us in a waiting room.
Yeah. And we sat there for a long time. I remember finally mom was like, you need to start making some noise or something. Otherwise, no one is ever going to help us.
Yeah. She was like, start being loud and acting like you're in pain.
Yeah. Which I was, but I'm just sitting there. I don't like drawing attention to myself. So I'm just sitting there. We're at the hospital. They're going to help us eventually. And mom's like, no, like you need to start screaming or something.
Yeah. That was kind of funny thinking back, but also just crazy. It took probably, we were probably sitting there with you for 30 minutes before the doctor finally came in. And she was like, okay, let's take a look. She looked at it, one look, and then it became a little bit like faster.
Rapid fire. And I remember her saying, are you kidding me? They checked you in under a sprain. I guess whoever had checked us in and gotten my information put in the notes that I had sprained my ankle or sprained my leg.
Yeah.
So the doctor was mad and then sent us straight to the x-ray room where they're maneuvering my leg, and it hurt so bad. I didn't have any pain medication.
Yeah, which... not even ibuprofen at this point.
Yeah,
nothing.
Nothing.
I remember we were like, can we at least get her some ibuprofen or something to handle this x-ray?
Yeah, it was bad. And then after the x-rays, they brought me to a room where a different doctor, the orthopedic doctor, came in and started talking to me, but like mostly to mom because I was just kind of laying there. And he started explaining that we would need to do surgery on my leg in order to repair it, and that they would need to transfer me to a different hospital. So I ended up riding in an ambulance anyway. So they needed to transfer me where they had a vascular surgeon team where they would be working together with the orthopedic doctor and in order to repair my leg.
Yeah, it's interesting because we've never sat down and just talked about it in this way, but it's kind of interesting reliving it with you. But I remember being in that room, and the room was so chaotic. We were just trying to figure out what was wrong. What were the results of the x-ray? I remember they had the x-ray up, which you had broken both bones in your lower leg. And there was also somebody addressing your leg that was trying to find a pulse in your leg. They couldn't find a pulse, so they were really worried. And so there was not only, like you said, the orthopedic surgeon, but also needing a vascular surgeon now, and that was a little bit more intense. And so amidst all of this, there's surgeons, doctors, nurses in this big room, and they're trying to express to you and express to mom what the plan is. And do you remember what you asked?
Yeah. So I asked two questions. First, I said, how long is it going to take? I don't know why I was so worried about how long this surgery was going to be.
Yeah.
And then my second question was, when am I going to be able to run again? And the doctor said, probably never. Let's focus on the possibility of you being able to walk again.
And as a 17-year-old, hearing that and just trying to even process the past 2 hours, I'm sure that was a lot.
Yeah, it was, my whole world just crumbled, basically, because that was hearing him say that I would never run again. Not only was running my social life, but it was also my future. That's how I was going to put myself through college. Yeah. I didn't really have any plans besides I'm running in high school and I'm going to run in college, and everything else after that is non-existent. I'll figure out my after college life while I'm in college running.
Honestly, really hard to see it from an outside perspective, knowing that you, the trajectory that you were on, and to have that just ripped away so fast was really hard. Okay. They get you in an ambulance, get you transferred to a different hospital, and the goal of the surgery was to repair the bone and repair the
arteries. So because of the severity of the break, it was a compound fracture, which means it broke through the skin, and it was my tibia and fibula. And so they needed to straighten out the bones and kind of like push them together. And then they put pins, two pins in my shin that were like pretty long, sticking out of my shin in two different places. And then one that went all the way through my heel, and all connected by these big heavy metal rods in order to stabilize the leg to allow the bones to heal. And then they also, while they were in there, they were, like you said, they were looking for the arteries. And the surgery ended up taking much longer than it was supposed to. You have two main arteries in your leg, and one of them they found right away, no problem. And the other one, I guess they were looking for hours and didn't end up finding it.
They didn't know if it was so severely damaged that they couldn't find it, if it was just completely severed or what. So they were just trying to find it to repair it, and yeah, they couldn't find it. And so
yeah, so they ended up concluding that I just don't have that artery. Like, I was born without it. So I guess that's why the blood flow was decreased to my foot. And also, I think because of the break, the other artery was probably being like cramped a little bit, contributing to that lack of blood flow. So
yeah,
but once they finished up, I have my foot still. So
yeah. And they were worried about amputation. Like, that was a possibility. It was very intense and scary.
I ended up staying in the hospital for a week, and one of the nurses that was at the first hospital, she came to visit me, and she was this sweet lady. She was like, oh, I'm so glad that you didn't lose your foot. And I didn't know that that was a possibility, like, going into it. And yeah, so I was like, what? And everyone was kind of like, oh yeah, we hadn't told her yet. But I'm like, yeah, me too. I'm glad that I didn't wake up without a foot.
Yeah. Oh, that's really funny. That was really sweet of her to come back and say hi and wish you well.
Yeah, I guess she was so worried, so she came to visit.
That's really sweet. So I know you said you were in the hospital for a week. So what did the recovery period look like?
So it was really, really hard. Like, everything, I couldn't walk. And they didn't even want me using crutches because it could get caught on the hardware that was on my leg. So we ended up moving my bedroom from upstairs to downstairs. Luckily, a couple of siblings had moved out at that point, so there was an extra room.
You're welcome.
So yeah, thank you for that sacrifice. Yeah.
Sorry for taking off the boot, but at least I left the extra bedroom downstairs.
Exactly. So I had a nurse coming to change bandages and doing wound care for several weeks. They would come, I think, 3 times a week. And I had basically, so it's called a wound vac. It's like a sponge on my incision. And then wrapped in plastic wrap and a tube tied to it that helps filter out any
just like infection and
yes
wounds.
So any fluids and that, and also the goal of it was to decrease the size of the incision where they were looking for my artery because it had swelled so much while they were in surgery that they couldn't suture it or anything like that. So I had that. I couldn't go to school for those 2 months while I had the external fixator on. Finally, I got the wound back off and ended up getting a skin graft over that wound. And then a couple weeks after that, I had another surgery to remove the external fixator and take the pins out. And then they put me in a cast, which came up past my knee.
Yeah.
And was like really big and awkward. But I was able to go to school after that. And I was in a cast for, I think, like 6 months.
And how was returning to school in your mind? Were you kind of down, or were you happy to return to school, or were you just kind of like, well, this is still really unfair? What was your mindset like?
I was still pretty down. I was still dealing with some repercussions from missing so much school and finals, and my mindset was like that this is really hard. I was kind of had come to terms with it at that point that this is just something that I am going through, but I did still have to go to cross country because it was one of our classes.
Yeah.
So, and I was still friends with people on the team, obviously. So it was kind of hard going, and they would like joke, which I would probably joke about it too, but they would just be like, oh yeah, like I think I'm injured, I can't run today too. Or I would be sitting there with the other injured people who had like shin splints or like little aches and pains. And it was so frustrating to see them just messing around and not serious about wanting to rehab their injury.
Yeah.
That like from my perspective was so small compared to me. And I'm like, I would give anything to be running right now. Like, why are you guys just sitting here hanging out?
Yeah. After you tried so hard to get to a certain place, achieve your goals, and you were doing it, and then to see other people not taking it as seriously, and you just don't have that option. You know,
yeah.
So I could see how that was really hard. As you were looking forward and your plans were to go run in college and kind of, you were kind of basing your decision for college off of where you were recruited and where you would be able to run. And so what did you start thinking about instead?
So all of that was off the table. And so I ended up bringing forward this plan that I had about culinary school. It was always on the back burner to running. I knew that I wanted to do culinary school, but it was going to be like after I ran for 4 or 5 years, if I could do it while I was running, you know, if there was a school that recruited me that also had a culinary program. So I brought forward that and ended up pursuing that. I went to UVU, which has a nationwide or worldwide recognized program. And it was it's a degree instead of just a certification, which I liked that. So I applied, which UVU is not difficult to get into, but luckily I did also have the grades.
Yeah.
I got accepted to UVU, and so that became my plan to come to Utah and do culinary school and just see where life takes me after that.
Yeah. And you did graduate from culinary school?
Yes, I did.
So you went to culinary school in Utah, and is that where you met your husband?
Yes. So I met Davis while I was going to school at UVU. So my roommates convinced me to download Tinder, which I was like super ashamed that I even had it, but that's how we met.
Cute.
I'll admit it now. But we went on our first date, and on our first date, he was like, well, I want to hang out more with you. And I was like, okay, well, I kind of want to go on dates with multiple people. I'm not interested in having a boyfriend. He was like, okay, well, we can still hang out, right? And I was like, sure. And then, but I didn't go on any other dates with anyone after that. We ended up hanging out a lot more. And then we dated for almost 2 years before we got married in the Payson Temple. And then 2 years later, we had our little boy, Bradley, in 2020. Right before the world shut down.
COVID, nice.
Yep. And then after I had him, a few years later, I was a surrogate for a family and had a baby for them. And then shortly after that, I got pregnant with Oakley and had her in 2023. She's 1.5 now and sassy.
So cute. So you have basically been, well, after your first, you were pregnant for pretty much 2 years, right?
Yeah. Been either pregnant or nursing or like preparing to get pregnant for the last 4 years.
Wow. And so the big question is, have you been able to run again?
Yes, I have, thankfully.
So I guess you started with walking after you got your cast off. And then what was the timeline from getting your cast off to being able to run again?
So I got my cast off in July of 2016, okay, which is after I had graduated high school. And I still had to wear a brace. It was an ankle brace, but kind of came up a little bit higher to cover part of my leg and just offer extra support because I was in a cast for so long. I didn't have any muscle and really did need to train my leg how to walk again. Mm-hmm. And kind of get those tendons and muscles working again.
Yeah.
And exactly 1 year after I broke my leg, we did a Thanksgiving 5K. And I didn't sign up for it because I wasn't sure if I was going to do it.
Yeah.
And I hadn't ran at all. But then I decided to just jump in and do it. And it was the hardest thing that I've ever done. I walked a lot. I ran really slowly. And that was the only time I've ever thrown up from running.
Yeah.
So I know that I was working my body so hard. And but I'm so proud of the fact that I did it. And that kind of just like kickstarted that part of my brain of like, I can run.
Yeah.
And I do want to keep running.
Prove to yourself that you could do this hard thing. And it's interesting that even though you were running really competitively, those hard races, Mount SAC, it's a really hard course and all of those races that you did. And it's like still doing a 5K after this big thing and running slow and walking, you're still more proud of that because of how hard it is and how much you had to overcome to get there than all those faster times. And I just,
Like I definitely worked hard in high school, but it was a different type of hard doing that 5K. So
yeah, that's amazing. Cool.
And since then I have kind of ran off and on, not super competitively, but I've done a couple 10Ks.
Mm-hmm.
And then this year, well, actually last year, I wanted to do a half marathon. That was my goal. But leading up to it, I was just a couple months postpartum and just was in the trenches of it, ended up not signing up for it, not preparing for it like I would have wanted to. But I still had that goal to do a half marathon. So this year in January, I got really serious about wanting to do a half marathon. So I started training and I did my first half marathon in June, the Utah Valley one. And it was
amazing.
It was so fun.
So what was your goal going in? I know you wanted to run a half marathon, but you also had a time goal. And what was it? And did you reach it?
Yeah. So my time goal was to for sure get under 2 hours, but I had a scary goal of getting 1:45. And that was my, like, I might be able to do it, but you know, scary, like I would really need to push myself. And I ended up during the race, I was feeling really good. And I finished in 1:41. So I was just like on a high for so long from that. Even still, I'm super proud of that time and where I started. And then being able to reach and surpass my goal was huge.
That's amazing. It shows kind of who you are, how much of a high achiever you are by setting, like, you had a baby, had a surrogate baby, and you were like, oh, well, I'm going to run a half marathon. And that's crazy to some people that you would even try and set that goal. I just think that's really cool.
Yeah. And I feel like I've grown so much as a person, even from breaking my leg. You know, at that time, running was pretty much my whole entire life.
Yeah.
So if I was the same person now who was like, I want to run a half marathon and then ended up not being able to do it last year, then like that would have crushed me again. But I feel like I've grown and I've been able to realize that there are other priorities sometimes. Like at that time, it was taking care of myself in other ways than running and taking care of my newborn baby and that kind of thing. And so, but then not completely forgetting that I do enjoy running and I did still have that goal. It just needed to be postponed.
Yeah. I love that. I think it really speaks to your resilience of being able to, I mean, I don't necessarily consider breaking your leg like a failure, but it's like you didn't get to accomplish the goals that you wanted to, and you had to learn how to overcome that. And then now as life's obstacles get in your way, I feel like you really have shown like how strong you are by continuing to overcome those obstacles. And it's really inspiring.
Thank you.
Also, the time that you said 1:41, yes, it's impressive for everything that you've been through, but it's also just impressive. And you went out and did that. And so when you were crossing the finish line, how did you feel seeing that time?
I was a little bit surprised because I was trying not to really look at my watch, so I didn't psych myself out. But I just remember crossing the finish line being so happy. I outkicked a couple of people at the very end too, which helped.
Yeah.
It was just euphoric, really, that I worked so hard to get there and train, and then it paid off better than I wanted it to.
Yeah. And your family was able to go to the race.
Yes. So you were there in the, so I saw like you at the finish line, and then my husband and kids both came, and my parents and a couple of aunts came. So it was really cool to see everyone, just a bunch of people there. My village was there to cheer me on and see me accomplish this huge goal. And Davis tried to hand me Oakley. As I was, they were a little bit before the finish line, and he wanted me to hold her crossing the finish line because he saw something on TikTok. But I was in the zone and I was like, no. And I was just like sprinting to the finish line.
I need time.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, what does it mean for you to have your kids see you do something like that and accomplish that goal?
It's really big for me to have them there to see me working hard. They, you know, Oakley doesn't quite understand it yet, but Bradley can see me and he asks questions. He knows that I wake up early and go on runs, or that I stay out late going on runs, or so he's able to see me put in the work. And then for him to see that pay off, and he can see how happy I am that I'm able to achieve my goals. And so I just hope that it translates to him being able to set goals and achieve them. And obviously, you know, a four-year-old's not going to run a half marathon, but he can see how I set goals and worked hard to achieve them, and he can do the same thing.
Yeah. So our boys are a year apart, and they ran the 1K after that half marathon. And I remember they were so excited they were like, we're going to get first place.
Yeah.
And they were super excited. So they went and did the race, and they didn't get first because there's a million kids doing this race, and it's not even like an organized thing. It's just for fun. And I remember Miles, my five-year-old, was really disappointed in himself. And he was like, but I just really wanted to win. And I got the chance to explain to him like, yeah, but like, don't you see how much mommy was running to prepare for this race? And that's really important. And that's why like I could accomplish my goal. So if you want to accomplish your goal, like you have to work towards it and like whatever your goal is. And so anyways, I just think it's really inspiring when moms take time for themselves, do something hard, accomplish a goal, and then also get to show their kids that they can do something hard. So it's just really impressive. Yeah. So you've already kind of touched on it. Just to kind of sum everything up, what do you feel like you've learned from going through the accident and the experience and recovery and just your story? What are your biggest takeaways from that?
I think one of the biggest things is that like I can do hard things, and I know that looks different for everyone, but just having this whole experience of having something I thought was my whole life and my whole future taken away, and then being able to come out stronger on the other side and grow into more than just a runner.
Yeah.
And I think also that it's important to have hope and faith. And I think that without those things, I probably wouldn't have had this character development that I have. And that, like, when you're in the middle of it, it might seem like it's the end of the world, and that you know, you don't always know where you're going to end up. But if you just keep pushing, sounds kind of cheesy, but just keep pushing and you can do hard things and everything will work out.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's like a big reason why I wanted to start this podcast, is just to share everyday stories that people have, because I think a lot of people that we know don't even know that you've been through this hard thing. They just think that you're, you know, an everyday runner. And I just think that it's such a testament of your resiliency and your work ethic and your character. And so, yeah, I'm just excited to share your story and hopefully have a few people listen and be inspired. And so thank you so much for coming on and sharing.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed hearing Jaden's story and how she chose to overcome such a big injury at such a young age. If you'd like to hear more stories, please follow the channel and share. If you're a runner and have a story to share, please send me a message on Instagram at Runner Stories Podcast. Thanks. Bye.